Other people, they need more. So we run an information type campaign where we really need to go beyond awareness. We need to give them some reasons why. And if that doesn't do it, we need to move to an education campaign. An education campaign is different, and believe it or not, despite the word education, it adds emotion to the mix. Simple data wouldn't do it. Now we need to appeal to their hearts and their guts. Of course, all of those first three are aimed at people who haven't had an awfully negative latent readiness. There's at least a neutral situation or a somewhat positive latent readiness. Now we get to one where people are ready, or at least some people are ready. They're with us, but they need someone to pat them on the back and say, hey, it's okay to hold this position. It's okay to keep buying cigarettes and smoking despite all you've heard from the Surgeon General. It's a simple reinforcement campaign of those people out there. Of course, some people do need major work. I called it attitude change just because I figured everybody would understand it, because that's the term we've used. But I'm really talking about dealing here in this whole perception arena. And, of course, some people need to have their behavior absolutely modified. It's the wrong behavior. They have not only negative latent readiness, they're already doing the thing that we don't want them to do. Now, in a sophisticated campaign, you may have all of those going on to some extent simultaneously once you know who it is you need to reach and where they are on the latent readiness scale. It's a science, friends. It's narrowed way down. It's tight. It's like an engineer. You know, they don't just say, you're building a bridge? Yeah. Well, I'm here from the nut and bolt company. What do you want? Oh, hell, I don't know for this bridge. Send me 10 million number sixes. You know, wouldn't that be great? I mean, all the little pieces would have a number six in them, and all the huge big girders would have a number six in them. See, professionals don't work that way. It's not easy. It's not the old one-size-fits-all silver bullet anymore. We get it down to specific publics. We know where they stand, and we aim one of those kinds of campaigns at them. And they may be going on simultaneously. I'll have an awareness campaign going on people that I'm fairly sure are with us, but they just needed to be, you know, kind of told about it again. I'll have a reinforcement campaign going on people who are with us, but gee, they're not sure, and they're socially, you know, in a group that maybe needs a little reinforcement. And meanwhile, for another audience, maybe the opposition, I may have a behavior modification campaign going on against them to see if I can change any of them. If I can't, at least to neutralize them. But all at once. Now think of the difference of that in the old self-selecting business where we throw one campaign out at everybody and everybody kind of sorts themselves out and we pray that 52% of them are on this side. I don't like that kind of odd. I want to know, just like Bob Teeter said, he knows before the election how the vote is going to come out. They know for sure at least 3 days before. And they're fairly sure about 10 days before. Well, I hate to see us taking any instruction from those people that run political campaigns, particularly any ethical instruction. But it may be they know something, or at least are practicing something that we haven't been. The sixth and final step is very simple. This is where you already shine. What techniques within that type of campaign will move people through the set of behavioral steps that will lead them to the ultimate. If you're selling a product, for example, the first step, if you're the small product in the market, one of the steps for one of the publics may be to try and just get them to question what they're presently using, the competitor's product. For other people, you need to reinforce their use of your product. The advertising people have used something similar to this, although they've suffered the same business. They decide most people are, let's say, resisting the product, so they send a message to everybody as if they were all product resistors. So all of us who've been loyal fans right away along say, geez, what'd you give up on me for? And we probably switch to some other product. That's how difficult it has become. But if we have a process system of that type, or draw your own, we can get people to move. Now here, however, is I think a major area of change. The tools are not the same that they were anymore, by a long shot. For instance, if you're going to do this kind of targeted public relations practice, trying to motivate people's behaviors based on the reality of where they are at the moment and the capability or incapability of leading them to positive behaviors, you have to develop, we have to develop some new skills. Negotiating skills, accommodation skills, in addition to just the straight out advocacy that we've been so good at. How about working with opinion leaders? Are you good at that? Do you have an opinion leader list in your computer, or just a media list? You're hopelessly behind some of our colleagues if you don't have an opinion leader list. I know organizations that have opinion leader lists of 50 and 60,000 people in the state, and I don't just mean a lot of lists of names. I mean that I know that Susie is the brother-in-law of Tom, and that they go fishing with Harry, all three from different towns, twice a year. Now you're starting to hit pay dirt. It's all possible with computers and with the way you and I know how to go out and work the crowd and get the information. Now, let's assume that I know that here's this network. They all live in these different places, and if I just saw them as names on a list, if it's a direct mail operation, hell, I don't care. But we're not in the direct mail business. Suddenly I say, aha, I got a network going there of people who talk to one another. Now, if I can penetrate that network and get to work with those people, which probably is going to mean some face-to-face kind of activity, now I can start having impacts because those people are identified as opinion leaders. And so I can get to them on their network. They can spread out to their followers, their crowd, if you will, and maybe in their crowd are some other opinion leaders, and I can spread that out. Well, in the state that we've got 60,000 networked names of opinion leaders, I must say it's pretty easy for us to find out first whether the things we're thinking about doing are going to work. We certainly can find out people's latent readiness fast. If there's a positive latent readiness, I can work this network to the point that, frankly, it doesn't much matter what other ideas are poured into the soup, unless ours is just such a weak idea that another idea or product, you know, is clearly superior. Because now we're talking about how the world works. The world does not work in these mass blocks. That's why we need a system like this based on this simple sociology. I mean, we've all talked about this, but have we got opinion leader lists in our computers? Now look, you keep up with every new editor. Jesus, some editor changes. Get right back there. Get it in the list. We don't want to send the wrong stuff. I'm saying we need to do the same thing with who are the opinion leaders in these publics up here that we've identified are the ones who can give us the behaviors or who could block those behaviors from happening. Essentially, there are five types of these influentials if you want a head start on doing a list like that. The ones we chart, of course, first we look for role models. Can I find a role model? Because they're already giving the behavior. They're modeling the behavior for others. They are models, just like a model in a fashion show. They're doing it out there, showing you what it looks like to actually do it in society, in real life. Powerful, powerful people. We all use those terms, but do we ever use the role models? Now, you can't mass communicate with a role model. This is a negotiation, an individual thing, or a third-party ricochet where I find Tom who knows the role model, and I talk to Tom, and Tom talks to the role model. It's a new ball game. After role models, there are opinion leaders. Opinion leaders, we all know, are folks who have a following, who are activists, positivists, and other people. You know, at the cocktail party, when somebody says, you know, I'm not sure about that school bond issue, and the other people around with their cocktails start to go like this because they thought they were for it. Until they heard the opinion leader say it may not be such a good idea. My God, my whole social standing is at stake. It's a joke, but it isn't a joke. That's how the world works. I mean, just study the diffusion. I won't show you the diffusion process again. I've showed that so many times, you must all know it by heart in your heads. But I mean, that's how the world works. People don't do anything without asking other people. 98% of us do nothing, according to 50 years of studies, without checking it out with somebody. And if you're still a skeptic, you know the famous example. Next time you go to lunch, just look around the crowd and perk up your ears for the first words out of somebody's mouth, which are what? What are you going to have? You can't even order lunch, for God's sake, without checking with the opinion leaders. And now you're telling me people are going to vote for your candidate or buy your product off in some kind of a little cell, making up their minds all by themselves? Get out of here. They're not going to do that. They're going to turn to role models if they can find them, opinion leaders if they can't. They're going to pay attention to power leaders. Those are not opinion leaders. I don't necessarily trust Annette Strauss's opinion out here, but by God, if I'm doing something in Dallas, she has the power to harm or help me, and I am going to deal with her. Then, of course, there are those wonderful cheerleaders. You all know the description of them. I mean, when everything is going clearly to hell and the battle is lost, they are still waving the pom-poms. We can do it. Get right in there. And we intellectually, see here again, intellect is the ruination of public relations. Intellectually, we say, we can't pull this off. It's a dead duck. But something in our, not our craniums now, but something in our hearts and something in our guts says, I'd sure like to pull it off. And somehow they wave those pom-poms and some adrenaline and some, I don't know what all those other chemicals are, but they come along and all of a sudden, by George, we pull it off against all odds. Just because of cheerleaders. I want to know who the cheerleaders are in my target publics. Because if I can get to them and have them out cheering, wow. Certainly we, all of us, ought to know who the cheerleaders are inside our organizations. Absolutely. But have you got a list of cheerleaders? If you haven't, for God's sake, go home and make a list of cheerleaders. You're effectiveness will go way up very soon. The final and fifth group of people we want to tie into are celebrities. Now, I want to explain that quickly. Jane Fonda never convinced anybody of anything. People don't believe her. But what Jane does is to get you and me to pay attention to subjects that we would never pay attention to otherwise. For us males, particularly when she appears, you know, in her aerobics costume, bang, we've got it. She's talking about whatever it is. There it is. Now, when I talk about celebrities, though, I don't just mean Jane Fonda. You get six people together, and one of them, at least, will, in most cases, fill the role of celebrity within that group. When the bridge club in your neighborhood meets, there's someone or some couple there who's a celebrity. Maybe it's the people who travel all the time. And have you ever noticed when the club comes together, everybody says, Sally, where were you last? See? Or maybe it's the person who's a real snappy dresser. You know, everybody kind of comes in and circles all around this and says, holy crap, where did you get those? You know, how much did that cost? But see, that's celebrity within a group. That they have gotten themselves attention. And so if we know who they are, and while everybody's circling around, they're saying, vote for the school bond issue, vote for the school bond issue, I mean, who knows? Someone will pay attention to it that otherwise wouldn't maybe have even thought about it. Now, these are different skills, I suggest to you, but they're powerful. And if you will read even Behavioral Science 101, you'll see that this is, in fact, how our society operates. Well, let's take a look at some other kinds of situations that are working for people. One of the first, maybe, that's worth talking about. Have you ever used games theory in dealing with your people? Do you put on, you probably put on contests or that kind of stuff. You know how those work. Well, try some games. See, it's not the mass communication anymore. It's getting small groups together and being able to use a game with them. This, a lot of you I know are doing this. We've been doing this very successfully. Computer games are big now. We get people who have a big disagreement on an issue. Right now, we're big, Bill, on the siting burn plants, as they call them. So you can't call them incinerators anymore because Hoi Polloi doesn't like that. But a burn plant somehow is all right, so we cite a burn plant. Now, you know, no matter where you stand socially on this issue, the fact is you and I do insist on going to McDonald's and getting all that stuff, and it has to be burned up. So you get them all together in a room, and you play a little computer game, and you take the people who definitely oppose the burn plant, and you put them over here at this console, and you make them the proposers of the burn plant, okay? And then you take the people who propose the burn plant, and you make them the local officials who have to mediate that. Then you take the local officials, and you make them maybe the opponents to this, or whatever the mix is. And then you have a relatively simple sort computer game played up where you say to the burn plant operator, okay, what size plant you're going to build? So he punches in, you know, 62 trillion tons a week. And immediately up over here on this screen says, 47 trucks an hour. See? And on this screen in the middle here it says, 6 new highway lanes, 42 new cops. And so they can all see what's going on. And then you say, well, suppose we don't build this plant. And then so that the city official says, well, suppose we don't build this plant. I don't want to make this decision. We're not going to build this plant. So he punches in no build. And over here on this screen, you know, the mountain of garbage goes up to the moon, see? And so everybody says, well, that's not acceptable. And suddenly, by the use of punching these buttons and having to look at the data, playing a role, people say, hey, look, I guess, you know, we can't have a burn plant here, or we can't solve this problem is just not viable. I mean, we got to deal with this. And so we get people who start having a dialogue. Now, I don't know how many meetings before that we sat there and tried to facilitate this. Gosh, and we mentioned all the same facts and nobody heard us. But once we sat them down to do this, they start hearing us. Different kinds of techniques, all using the kind of public relations skills that you and I already know, how to get people together, how to get them to look at each other. You know, I wish we weren't so hung up on sex in our society, because we've about concluded that what would really work is if we could get all the sides together in a room and, for God's sake, get all their clothes off. Really, I'm serious about this. Because then they'd all have to look at each other and say, Jesus, how about that? You know, I mean, we're all exactly alike. Let's deal with this, baby, and get it over with. Actually, I'm just a voyeur, and I thought that would be fun anyway. But let me show you a little view graph here that will maybe give you some thoughts, some ideas anyway. A lot of you have seen this before. This is how the Cooperative Extension Service lists the credibility, the effectiveness in behavioral terms. They have been working with behavior, remember, since 1914 when the Smith-Lever Act created the Cooperative Extension Service, because their goal is to get farmers and rural families to do things. See, it didn't do them any good to go back to their annual budget to Congress to say, gosh, a lot of farmers are thinking about crop rotation. Congress didn't give a damn. They had to go back and say, we got 482 million acres in crop rotation. That's all that counted. So from the beginning, they've been practicing a lot of this. What they tell you is all that stuff up at the top, as you go down the chart, they're effective. At the top of the chart, they're not effective. Now, just take a quiet minute and lean back and brace yourself and ask one question. What do I do in my practice? Not very comforting, huh? Worse, they have factored into this the forget factor studies. You're all familiar with those. Those were the first real behavioral studies that have still come down to us for public relations practice. I think they were first done in 1917. It's this whole question of how long do you retain something and make it really part of your latent readiness pattern. What we know today is that the one at the top there, talks and printed matter, they have a memorability of about 10%. As you move down the chart, if you can get people to both read the printed matter and listen to the talk, but also force them to watch something, which is why I put you through this lovely handwriting, is because if you're hearing me and watching that, the memorability goes up to 30%. And so on down the scale until when you come to doing, it's about a 90% retention. And that's why if I can get people to sit at this computer or to play some kind of a game, come to an exhibit, you can see how we're getting down there, but now notice what's happening. Mass activities are just less and less effective. Just less and less effective. Now look, if you're in the political game, you may say, well, no, that's not right. I mean, Bob Teeter said it's the media stuff that does this. Oh, yeah? Well, Bob, I don't want to disagree with you, eminent authority that you are. But if you've worked on any political campaigns lately, have you noticed that thousands of volunteers are recruited and coffees are held at every damn crossroads and there are, you know, raffles and you name it? Because we know we got to get those people to press the flesh because that's a relationship. I'm not going to know George Bush. I don't want to know George Bush, okay? But if my neighbor is a Bush worker, and I have a relationship or can build a relationship with that person, and that person says, vote for Georgie, baby. If nothing else, for God's sake, do it for me. Guess what? The studies show that we will do it. That's what's happening. That's the system. You may or may not like this system. You can probably design a better one. I don't know about that, but I would suggest to you that if you're willing to even consider doing just the first two steps of that, I think it will make a change in your practice. Next time you have a problem, an opportunity, an assignment, just lean back and ask, what behaviors am I trying to motivate here? What do I want people to do? What do I want people not to do? Or what do I want people just to let us do? And then say, now, what I ordinarily would perform, will it get me to that behavior? And if the answer is no, don't do it. And once you start down those roads, I guarantee you, you'll publish a heck of a lot less paper. You'll leave the media alone a lot more. They all have their place. Don't misunderstand me, but you'll do a lot less of them. In an awareness campaign, the media is great. I mean, they can reach millions of people quickly. And it's a self-selecting process. Those who care about it will be made aware. It will just change the practice. This model works whether you are a writer on the company's newsletter or whether you are the senior vice president in charge of all relationships for the organization, because it doesn't matter. If you're a writer on the newsletter, when you sit down to write the article you've been assigned, you ought to say, hey, what's the goal of this article? And if there's no goal like this, maybe as a professional, you ought to be going back to the editor or whoever assigned it to you and say, why are we doing this? And if they don't have a reason, maybe you ought to try and get another assignment. Because I think that this will work, as far as we can tell, in just about every situation. Well, you've been very patient. I haven't explained it very well. Don't blame me, damn it. It's Monday morning. And so now if you have any questions or whatever, I'd be glad to take them. Yes. Okay. The question is, how does one do research to measure where people are on a latent readiness scale? Very simple. Instead of just doing the kind of research we've traditionally done, which is basically attitudinal or informational based, you plug into that a behavioral factor. Now, I don't want to stand here and tell you that getting people to tell you what behaviors they're going to give is any more reliable than getting them to tell you what their attitudes are. They don't even know what their attitudes are, and they certainly can't predict their behaviors. But we do have techniques for asking them questions about recent behaviors or behavior patterns over time. And if we combine that, with their perceptual questions, with their information flow questions, we're finding that we can get pretty good information. And in a lot of cases, believe it or not, you can get better information on latent readiness with a flat-out question. If you tomorrow we're going to do the following, you know, what would you do? And we're finding, our finding so far in our Dudley Research subsidiary, is that people can give you pretty good answers about that. Not only that, but that's a case where top of the head answers are the best possible answers. Top of the head answers on other stuff is sometimes not what we want. But top of head is exactly what we want on latent readiness, because that's how they gauge themselves at the moment to be thinking or feeling about the particular subject. Yes?
Do you go at that a couple of different ways?
Oh, well, we have simple rules for research. One, never ask any critical question once. You always ask it. We all know this, right? You ask it a multiple of ways, a multiple of times. You never use one method. If you're doing telephone, you mix that with some in-depth. If you're doing mail, you mix that with some telephone. You know, we do everything we can to bulletproof the research, and even then people lie like hell and don't know. But, I mean, you know, you can sort it all out over time. But notice what's happening here, though. It's a research-based scientific profession that focuses on where the problem is, and if you don't like it, go back and work for the media. They deal with mass audiences. They're getting less and less mass all the time. People don't even treat the media as mass audiences, because think of it as a dentist. If your molar hurts, for God's sake, do you want them drilling your incisor? The answer is no. That's what professionals do. They find out the symptoms. They, through their professional knowledge and perhaps some additional research, are able to find out what will remedy the symptoms, and then they have the techniques to offer that remedy. And that's what we're finding out here, is what's the situation? Where does it hurt? What of the various techniques that we have in our toolkit can we use? And let's give them the techniques. And look, we're just like the doctors, you know, damn it, if those pills don't work, try some other. After all, it gets two office visits. What the hell? You got to think like labor union, you know, or you're, yes.
If you were going to take this on a real idiot level in terms of research, it would tell you statistical research is well and good, but don't do that.
Statistical research is a damn waste of time. You can get all that from the census, if you want my opinion. We haven't done polling or statistical research for 10 years. It's not trustworthy. It's just not trustworthy, unless you're dealing with these very gross kind of situations. If you're really getting down to have to move people to do something, you need to go far beyond the old kind of polling, attitudinal research. Because people will tell you absolutely their attitudes are this way, and then they'll behave totally differently. You know, behavior, after all, is a situational thing. I'll tell you right now, boy, the language I use with a bowling league on Thursday night is not the language I use with a preacher after the sermon on Sunday. It's the same me. It's the same technique. It's my mouth using language out of my mind. But think how different it is. That's why we need to have this kind of focus. Public relations has become personalized relationship building. There is an incredible future for us if we learn how to do these things. But if you are involved in any hot issues inside your organization or outside, and you are still finding that the silver bullet, let me just explain that, by the way. On behalf of Coors, I want to tell you, this is a small s, small b. The silver bullet, capital S, capital B, is wonderful and works. But the small silver bullet, it doesn't work anymore. And so this is how we deal with that situation. If you want to know more about this, I'd suggest a couple of things you do. I mentioned Coors. This afternoon, Rosa Bunn from Coors, who is practicing this very, very effectively inside her organization, is giving one of the PD sessions. You might want to stop in on Rosa and see how she's doing work in that organizational effectiveness arena. If you want to know how to deal better with smaller groups, dyads, as the, you know, don't you love the social science language? You got dyads and triads and whatever. If you're going to deal with these smaller groups, Stacy Smith and Lois Hogan from our firm are doing a PD this afternoon on organization development techniques and how they directly apply. You might want to do that. Of course, I'd love to have you subscribe to PR Reporter. And if you want to buy the new edition of the case book that Alan Center and I are doing, Prentice Hall would love to have you sell them one because Simon & Schuster is beginning to look at their quarterly returns. And other than that, what the hell can I tell you? You've been very patient. I will get this down so I can explain it better. Of course, you could always, you know, hire a public relations consultant and have them tell you. There are a lot of people, who are doing this. Let me just send you away with one case if you think this isn't the truth. Town in Wisconsin, I think it was, no, Oregon. Research, very good research, showed going into, I think it was January, that 70% of the people in this community were absolutely opposed to doing anything about the finances of the local school. They'd had continuing bond issues and raises and so forth over the last several years. 70% of the people said, forget it, I won't touch it. Oregon is a state, if any of you are from there anyway, taxes is unheard of there. They just don't. And so here sits public relations practitioner for the school district with a huge problem. They hadn't been putting money into maintenance, and the roofs were actually leaking on the kids. Okay? What do you do? 70% of the people, their latent readiness is totally negative. She looked back over all the campaigns they had run, and they were all this mass kind of stuff, support the schools, and, you know, the superintendent is always up there saying support the schools, which the average voter translates into vote for my raise, you see. Just dumb thinking. So she says, okay, we're going to try something like this. So first of all, she says, there, as far as this campaign is concerned, there is no such thing as the school district. Nobody cares about the school district. She says, we're going to do it school by school. 60 schools all ran their own campaigns in their own neighborhoods. They were all volunteers by opinion leaders in those neighborhoods who supported the schools. The first thing they did was to go out and recruit all the opinion leaders in their network. They did the usual kind of information materials, the usual kind of group meetings, all done by these volunteers, all going right down that model, taking them step by step by step. In 90 days, they won that election 62%. And never once did they do a mass activity. I mean, it works, friends. Go out and try it. Thanks a lot.